Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started. Welcome to Grand Rounds. This morning, it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Elisa Martinez, who is faculty at FAU, as you all know. She received her medical degree from the University of Miami and did her residency and chief residency at the University of Virginia Internal Medicine. Her areas of interest are medical education, primary care, and medicine. She currently serves as the Director of Foundations of Medicine course at FAU and is a core faculty in the Internal Medicine Residency Program. Today she's going to give us a talk on the use of social media in medicine, which of course none of us ever do.
Thank you. All right. So I'm going to step away from that because I'm going to double buzz. So we're going to talk a little bit about the use of social media in medicine, but I like to get to know my audience to start with, and I don't know where you are with regards to social media use. So if you could actually go use your phone and kind of put your camera on and scan that QR code on the top of your camera, you should see a website. It'll give you a prompt to go to a website and then log in using BRRH. And I'm going to get my head out of the way. And I promise I won't post any of your answers on social media. Yep, so on the top, you should get a ribbon. If not, you can just go to the website, socrative.com, and then click on the student login. All right. So it looks like most of your phones are down, so I'm going to go ahead and go to my poll and trying to figure out who everybody is. So just looking at who uses social media, looks like right now yes is in the majority, while a few of you do have an account and don't actually log in, which is not an uncommon thing either, and about a quarter of you are not using it at all. All right, so let's see where we are next. All right, so my question to you, for those of you that are and aren't using social media, do you think social media is good for healthcare providers? All right. I don't want to bias everybody else with everybody else's answer, so I'll show the poll in just a second. I think that about covers it. All right. So it seems like an even split between I don't know what's going on and, yeah, it sounds like a positive thing. All right. So how about for patients? Do we think it's good for patients? All right, so again, this one actually, we're not, patients maybe should stay off of social media. We'll talk a little bit about that today as well and some of the benefits and downsides to patients. All right, so did you know that there are social media policies from the AMA and most institutions? All right. Oh, wow. Good half of you actually knew about that. The AMA does actually have some policies, and I'll go into them in a little bit. And my next question is, have you actually read the institutional policies here at whatever institution you're from? I'm assuming most of us have some kind of working relationship with Boca Regional, so I threw that one on there. But wherever you're from, for the students, FAU. All right, we're doing great. All right. That explains a lot of what I see for the student. No. All right. So with that, let's go ahead and step away from, oh, you know what I just realized? Where, it's my clicker, there it is. All right, so we'll go ahead and get started on the actual talk of what we're gonna be discussing today. But it sounds like we have a nice varied group of social media users. Everybody has an account, questionable whether it's beneficial or not. As far as disclosures, I have no financial disclosures. I will be mentioning company names like Twitter, Facebook, things of that nature, but I promise I have no financial relationship with them. I wish I did, but I don't. And the other thing that I'd like to mention is if you try to Facebook or Twitter or anything, look me up, I am not a social media influencer. I like to consider myself a voyeur. I watch quite a bit, but I don't participate. And this is why, because my humor can sometimes come across wrong, and if somebody read that tweet, I'd probably get fired from FAU. So that is my other disclosure. All right, so the objectives for today, we're going to talk a little bit about the dangers of using social media from a perspective of being a physician as well as a healthcare provider, both from the patient privacy perspective as well as from a professionalism perspective. Discussing the benefits of using social media for lifelong learning, because there are benefits, and I think a lot of us mentioned in my poll that there probably are some benefits to physicians. And then we're going to explore ways to address patients consulting with their social media and bringing that into our practices. You might look at this and say, well, Grand Rounds, we usually talk about like the latest treatment, innovations, and delivering care. But remember, as physicians, one of the things that we have to have is communication and professionalism. So really, that's what I'm going to be focusing on today, and maybe not the latest, coolest treatment for a given disease. So this is still relevant to our practice. So the definition of social media, really any form of electronic communication, websites, social networking, microblogging, through which users create online communities to share information, ideas, personal messages, and other content. Very broad definition of what social media. I think most of us, when we think about social media, we think about Facebook, Twitter, right? Maybe YouTube may be considered social media to some, but it turns out there's a lot that are actually part of social media, right? Any of these can be considered. So things like LinkedIn, Doximity, for those of you that are part of that. My kid's favorite is TikTok, which I don't allow them to play with now, but Kevin MD would be another one within the realm of the physicians that might be on that as well. So social media is actually quite broad. It's really, if you create a blog and other people are looking at it and you're creating a community, that's social media. It's not just posting on Facebook, all right? So now that I said that, the change of who's participating in social media might be a little bit different. Pinterest, for those of you that are into those creative things. My cakes don't ever come out right, so I don't do that. All right, so who is using social media? So this is actually a poll from 2018, and things are moving rather rapidly within this realm, so this might actually change in 2019. But if you look here, who is using what, right? So the most commonly one is going to be YouTube. If you Google anything, one of the first things that comes up is being able to click on YouTube. So a lot of us actually do participate and do things on YouTube. Within YouTube, you can actually follow people so that when they post new things, so videos that you like, you can be notified of those, and that's where you start getting into the social media aspect. Facebook, by far, is still the most commonly used. Twitter, as you can see here in the general population, is down at 22%. It's much higher within the physician realm, especially in the last few years. And then if you look at how often they're using it, do they use it several times a day, about once a day, or less often? 50% of the patients are actually using it several times a day. So that means people are looking at their phone or their computer or wherever they're accessing it quite often to connect with their community. And a lot of times with that community, it's within healthcare. What are my questions about my own health, as well as for physicians? Let me meet with other healthcare providers that can give me some insight into taking care of patients. So social media use and healthcare providers. This was a small study in Texas, so the numbers are not that big. But you can see the use of social media within healthcare providers is actually a little bit higher than the general population. You see here 88% or so of nurses are using it, and 88% of MDs are using it. As far as contributions to the online forums, physicians are doing that more than the RNs, at least in this particular study. And then being aware of social media policies, the nurses were much more aware versus the physicians that were not aware of the policies that existed. I did want to break it up into specialty, and you'll see that there's not that much difference. So, you know, family medicine, just thinking of our primary care specialties, good 78% or so are actually using social media. And this is a mixture of both professional and personal use. Oncology, so just going into the subspecialties, a little bit less, about 72%. Surgery, much less by comparison. However, within surgery, I will say plastic surgery and urology is very far to the right, more so than general surgery, which tends to be a little bit further to the left on that. And then radiology, you know, we would expect them to be high users. They're always on the computer. My husband's a radiologist, does not use social media, so he's on the pink side. But they're about the same as family medicine. So you can see that even across specialties, a lot of people are using social media. And then going into students who don't have a specialty yet, I know I have a couple students here. So it turns out about 75% of medical students reported using social media frequently. That's quite a bit. And 14% of them said they reported posting profanity, and 18% reported depiction of intoxication of themselves. I will get into a little bit later, it's not just the students that are doing this, residents don't laugh yet. This happens across the board, as well as in the practicing physicians as well. But just note that that's a big proportion of people that our patients can be looking at and note these types of things. So who is looking? So we're most concerned about our patients. I will say, for the attendings in the room, learners do tend to look at our posts as well. I'm not going to get into that. I'm looking at it more from a patient perspective. But 42 to 85%, I know that's a pretty broad range, but realize that the research in this area is rather new, and so a lot of these studies are done in small numbers, but about 42 to 85% of patients would like to follow their healthcare providers on social media. And the interesting thing is that most of them do it out of curiosity. It was about 100% of them was just, I'm just curious about their life outside of being a doctor. The rest of them did want to obtain information about the physician, the hospital, and the typical things that we would think that patients are looking for when they look for us online. But the interesting thing is that 100% was out of curiosity about what their life is like. 43% actually thought it was appropriate to message physicians via social media. So, hey doc, you saw me last week, this medicine isn't working. They thought that was completely appropriate to use social media. So while we are aware of HIPAA, our patients are not. So we need to think about how to address this. And then more than 90% feel it is important for doctors and or hospitals to actually have a social media presence. So for those of you that don't, our patients do want us to have this. So, because it is so wanted by our patients, and I think because all of us do use it, I want to start with the potential pitfalls of using social media. The three main ones that I kind of lumped, these are my own sort of breakdowns, is really the impact on your professional identity, your institutional impact, how you reflect on your institution, as well as patient confidentiality. So these, I think, are the big three that we tend to violate the most or have issues with as healthcare providers. So we'll start. The other thing to note is that social media by itself is not what creates the unprofessional behavior. It just gives us a way of showing the rest of the world the things that we do that can be considered unprofessional. All right, so don't blame it. It's Facebook's fault that I got drunk and was passed out in front of the bar. No. It's Facebook's fault that everybody saw that you were drunk and passed out in front of the bar. All right? So realize that this is just a way for now everybody to see what we're doing. All right. So impact on professional identity. So I just pulled this picture. I don't know who this person is. I do have a link to where I got it from since this does get shared. But if you think about it, when we're seeing patients, we come, we're dressed professionally. You know, we're ready. Our speech tends to be a little bit differently. You know, even me standing here, if you talk to me in the hallway, is very different speech than what I'm using right now. We put on our professional, coat, our identity. We don't necessarily want our patients to see what we do at home and whatever it is. That is hidden from them, and we choose what we want to share with our patients. We choose how much we want to give them about our personal lives. Well, social media has completely blown that out of the water because now patients can actually see exactly what we do, right? They can see that last weekend I was at a birthday party with my kids or whatever it is. They can now, they have an insight into who I am as a professional and as a person. So it really blurs the line. Early social media users are actually quite interested in this, or early career physicians are actually quite interested in this idea of blurring professional and personal lives. They think it allows a better relationship with the patients, which may not, you know, I think meeting patients at their same level and, you know, realizing that we are also human is not a bad thing, but realize that there's pitfalls to that as well, so you need to be cognizant of that. So let's go to a poll here. If you have your poll open, you can see here, you run into a patient while you're at a bar. You have a beer in your hand, they recognize you, you're still in scrubs, but you're not on call. Do you think that the patient seeing you there is considered, is that unprofessional? All right. Okay. So two-thirds of us think no. All right. So a third of us think yes. I don't know who's saying what. And a few of us are just not sure because maybe we just still have our... No. All right. So let me go back to my slides here. All right. So now I'm going to change it a little bit. So now you're finishing up. You're in your scrubs. You're off service. You're going to meet with a few colleagues at happy hour. You go to a bar. You're in your scrubs. You have a beer in hand. Snap a picture. Now you post it on Facebook, Twitter, wherever. I don't know. Is that considered unprofessional? Remember that now that lives on. That can be shared with multiple people. Look, they have their FAU scrubs on, and they're drinking a beer. Is that considered unprofessional? Right? Well, we're going to talk about that. What if they're over age 21? So it's interesting because all of us, I mean, all right, this is being recorded and shared. I had a beer this weekend, went to a restaurant. Is that considered unprofessional? I would like to think not. I consider myself a somewhat professional person. But now all of a sudden when it gets shared multiple times over and you're representing the, you know, profession of being a physician, how are you reflecting on the profession? And this is where things get a little bit gray with social media, is that anybody can take a picture out of context. So that's a good question, though. So you're all drinking, bottle in hand. I like Scrubs. It's a great show. All right, so I'm going to go back here and change the question just a little bit and tell me if it changes what you think. So you actually appear intoxicated in the picture. That being passed out in front of the bar. Now, is that considered unprofessional? Your patient sees you live, passed out in front of the bar, or in the picture, you're appearing that way. All right, so great. So we agree that that would be unprofessional. All right, so let's talk a little bit about what actually happens. And what's been written about in the literature with regards to this. Because I actually don't disagree with your initial. Is it really wrong? I mean, I run 5Ks and at the end, you know, you get a drink or whatever. And have I posted about that? Sure. Is that considered unprofessional? Apparently it is. So it turns out a lot of professionals have been fired for violating societal expectations of that profession. These are teachers. Teachers who have posted things that... are against what would be considered professional for a teacher. Sexually suggestive pictures of themselves, let's say. They have actually been fired. Lawyers, for instance, have also been fired for similar things. Physicians have as well. This picture down here is actually from a post of a physician that went to Haiti after the earthquake, I believe it was. And you can see him with two bottles. There's another child behind him. There was actually another picture of them holding the military's guns as well. So there were other pictures that led to this. And several of these physicians were actually let go from their positions at their hospitals once they returned. It's interesting because the people that were with them during the mission were like, they gave 200% of taking care of these patients. They were not unprofessional, but the reflection of what these pictures did led to them being let go. So while social media may seem benign, and hey, I'm having a good time with my friends and I'm having a drink, maybe in street clothes it wouldn't be considered that unprofessional, but definitely when you are wearing your cape of being a healthcare provider, be aware of how that reflects upon you and your institution. All right? These are a couple other cases. I didn't want to just say that it was doctors. You know, everybody in the healthcare profession also does it. A nurse in California actually posted following a black man that was shot by the police that the black man deserved it. It was in response to another post that was on there that was reflected as that is not a professional response to that. And she was actually let go. Another doctor, she was an anesthesiologist, posted what you can see here on Facebook. This, again, was in response to another post that was started. So she's replying. She didn't start the conversation. But you can read what she posted. That's not good. So what does social media do to us that allows this to happen? Again, social media doesn't make us unprofessional. It lowers this sort of barrier that we usually put on, that we know how to behave. And then sometimes the things that come out are not what we would normally present to people. Because we're not talking to people. We're talking to a screen. All right? Not to say she's not at fault and probably harbors some very racist feelings, and I don't disagree with letting her go. But you can see how this post now led to this person, they ended up resigning and not being fired, but you can imagine what was actually being discussed behind closed doors. All right, so I told you I was not going to leave the residents out. With medical students and residents. So this is a little bit trickier, because with physicians, nurses, other healthcare providers, we're kind of at-will employees. We can be fired for really anything that the employer really doesn't care about unless you work for the government, good or bad. All right, so medical students, on the other hand, are held to a sort of guidebook, a handbook that's provided to them. They're not at-will employees, they're students. But they actually did a study. They sent surveys to all of the student affairs deans and asked about the social media posts that have been reported to you. So this is not the students, all student populations. These are students that have been reported to the student affairs deans. What was it that was reported? About 50% had either profanity or discriminatory language towards patients. Okay? 39% had depiction of intoxication. So not the friendly, here's my beer, hi. Like, I am drinking too much. Here's one of the examples was a line of shots in front of them and looking a little bit off. 38% had sexually suggestive material, things of imitating oral sex or other sort of positions in scantily clad people. 13% had violations of patient privacy. So yes, students have the capability of violating our patients' privacy. So be aware of that. Luckily, it's the lower of the number, but it's there. Most of these reports were actually done by fellow students, residents, or attendings, but it was about 10% that were actually reported by patients. 7% of these students were actually dismissed. Okay, so for students, be cautious about what you post. It can result in you not being able to complete medical school. To our surgery colleagues, so our surgery residents, this particular study, they took, I want to say it was about 360 residents that had across multiple different programs. They looked and said, all right, so let's look at their Facebook, it happened to be Facebook, posts, and let's see if they have anything unprofessional. So Dr. Genuet, you'd be happy to see that over 70% had no concerns And I'm sure in your program it's 100%, so not to worry. However, 14% had potentially unprofessional conduct. So the potentially is the kind of, what does that mean? So that is the person holding the drink, maybe making a comment that's politically charged, that could be reflected potentially as unprofessional, depending on who's reading it. 12% had unprofessional conduct. Okay, HIPAA violations, intoxicated, racist and derogatory comments towards their patients. All right, those were the 12%. I know that's a small number, but that's a large number of unprofessional posts. Okay, this was actually also done. I mentioned that urology and plastic surgery tends to be a little bit more over represented in social media, and they had almost the same exact numbers. So it doesn't matter if you're a general surgeon, urologist, plastic surgery also had similar numbers. Within family medicine surveys, they were similar as well. So it's not just the surgeons for the medicine residents here, it's all of them. All right, so we can see that our personal sort of professional identity can be affected. But let's talk a little bit about the institutional impact. All right, so I'm going to go back to a post or a question here. All right. So you're a consultant in the hospital, and you're consulted for something that you think is ridiculous. You don't need to be consulted for this. So you tell the patient that the primary doctor taking care of them called you because they don't know how to take care of basic things, whatever it is. I don't know what your specialty is. Do you think that's unprofessional, telling the patient that? Dr. Martinez doesn't have any idea what to do with the sprained ankle. What's wrong with her? In your orthopedics. All right. Totally true. All right, so let's see. Oops. Let me actually click. All right. Great. So 88% of us felt that that was unprofessional. I would say yes. Please don't say that about me. I know I don't know how to do a lot of things. All right. So let's move on to a case. So I'm going to switch it on. Now I'm going to make the hospitalist the unprofessional person, right? So they post on their social media account, why can't whatever specialty just handle simple medical issues? So frustrating. I have seen this post multiple times, and probably just in the last 24 hours, by residents, faculty, not necessarily at our institution. You know, it's all, and I don't know these people. I've also seen people that I know have posted this. All right, so from the perspective of the hospitalist, I'm frustrated. This is my 1,000th patient that's, you know, I have to go see. I'm tired. I just want to go home. It's my anniversary, whatever it is, right? You're frustrated. You know, maybe that's the way that you express it. When we get frustrated, sometimes we say things that we don't mean to say, okay? How do you think the other physician felt? Probably not good. Why is this person insulting my knowledge, insulting my ability to take care of patients? All right, fine, so you insulted a colleague. Not the end of the world. All right, what do you think the patients felt? Now, a patient sees your post about their doctor not knowing how to take care of patients. Do you think they have trust in the team that's taking care of them? I would say not. And my team can't even talk to each other. They're insulting each other. The doctor, the primary that's taking care of me is posting for all the world to see that they don't know what they're doing. It was a pretty innocuous, frustrated post that can turn into lots of people being hurt. Okay? So I have seen this, and people have been reprimanded, although I haven't seen anybody fired for this. Let's talk about a different situation. So now you're the emergency room. I'm trying to make sure I represent all specialties. Emergency room doctor, I'm not against any particular specialty. All right, so you're in the emergency room. You're at the trauma center, and you just saw another case of a patient being injured by the Brightline train. All right? So you post, because, you know, there's been so many already. Hey, PSA, not prostate-specific antigen, but public service announcement. PSA for the day. It's not smart to try to beat a train. Post a picture of an x-ray with no patient identifier. But you are employed by Boca Regional, and that is on your, you know, your page so that people can identify where you work. Did we just violate any issues here? Yeah. So we'll get into the patient issues. Is this a sensitive way of talking about a patient that just got injured? Would we tell the patient, hey, don't run in front of a train anymore, right? I don't think we'd say that. We might say it in our head, but we would not tell the patient that, okay? So this is a problem. There's a couple of problems with this post, actually, because it can be patient violation, but also it's quite insensitive. So what happens in the real world? These are all my sort of made-up ones, but this is a real case. So for those of you that watch New York Med, I don't. So this is one of the nurses that works in the ER there, and she was fired after taking this picture of an empty trauma room, right, with all of the mess that happens after a trauma. And on it, she said, man versus six train. It was somebody that got hit by a subway. And then, you know, all sorts of hashtags. Okay? So this is the aftermath. Man versus six train. That was really the issue. Well, her employers saw this and felt that this was an insensitive post towards the patient. That, you know, it really wasn't showing the caring that we should have towards patients that have been in an unfortunate situation. From her perspective, she was probably trying to say, hey, look at these interesting cases that we see, and look at what good we do, and look at, like, what goes on, right? Like, the mess that results in the patient doing well. So she was actually fired. Okay? She's off doing her own thing now. She's actually doing quite well, but this did result in her being let go from her position. All right? This is a study of perception, so this wasn't actual cases, but this was in pathology. They gave several different program directors and other faculty within pathology residency programs some cases and wanted to see how they would react to these. So they also gave them to residents. So you're the medical director of the microbiology lab, you're out at a conference, and you look on Facebook, and one of the residents posted that the laboratory just identified a very rare positive case of Francisella tularensis. The medical director sees that several of the residents and laboratory employees have also seen the post and commented on it, including several posts related to lawnmower disease and roadkill. Okay? So now all of a sudden we've gone from let's talk about tularemia to roadkill. Okay? So they asked, what would you do if you saw this post? If you look at the attendings, if you look at the attendings, a few of them said an informal meeting, maybe a formal meeting, but if you look at this blue color, that's probation. And probation does go on your permanent record as residents, so they felt that this was a pretty serious event, and actually a few of them said dismissal. All right, so off of just trying to be funny on social media, your boss, as a resident, might actually fire you from your residency program. They asked residents the same question. Interestingly, it wasn't all that different. I mean, a few of them thought it would be more appropriate, you know, for the formal and informal meetings. But still, a few thought that probation and dismissal was reasonable for this particular post. So residents get it. But, you know, when we're in the middle of something, you know, we can definitely have lapses when we post things. All right, so moving on to patient confidentiality violation. This is probably one of the more common ones that we see. So here's a case. So you're a resident. You're interested in endocrinology fellowship. And you see a patient with diabetes who turned out to have acromegaly. The diagnosis is really considered after changes in their facial features. So you ask the patient, this is a really great case. I want to present it at the national meeting. Can I take a picture of your face and post it? And they say, yeah, absolutely. You know, to help another patient, yes, you can do that. So you take a picture, put it on your poster. You go and you present at your national meeting, and you're excited. So you get somebody to take a picture of you. You post it on Facebook with the patient's picture on the poster right behind you, right? So is that a violation of patient confidentiality? Patient gave you consent for research purposes, but not necessarily to share their picture and how they look and their diagnosis all on Facebook, including what hospital that you work at probably on your poster, okay? I could totally see how this could happen, all right? If the patient found that, they may not think anything of it. They did give consent. Or they might actually think that there's a violation there. So be aware that even these small little innocuous posts can be issues. All right. So we know about HIPAA. We know we don't go into the elevator. We don't start talking about patients because you don't know who's in there. You don't know if Mrs. Jones' granddaughter is in there as we're talking about all of her issues, right? So we don't talk about this. This is the first thing they teach us when they teach us about HIPAA. Don't talk about things in the elevator. I don't know why it's always the elevator, but it is, okay? What they don't tell us is where do we not talk about it on social media? Because we don't know who's watching. Everything is free game. And remember that also if you post something and you take it down, somebody could have taken a screenshot and shared it. So be aware of that. So let's do a different case. You're excited that you recently saw a case today of tetanus. Decide you want to share to spark interest in your field. You post. You're excited. I learned, right? I love being able to see things every day. Learning about tetanus. Hashtag. Hashtag tetanus. Hashtag BRH. What an amazing case of lockjaw today. All right. You can see I don't Twitter very often. So is this patient violation? You've told them the hospital. You've told them the day of when you saw this. Could I identify who this patient is? Potentially, right? So again, it came from I'm excited about what I do. I'm excited I learn every day. Look at these interesting cases that I get to see. But I've just violated a patient's confidentiality. They may or may not have an issue with it, but it's still a HIPAA violation. All right? So remember your PHI, your protected health information. There's a whole bunch of them. But the ones that I really want to note, region smaller than a state. Your hospital is definitely smaller than a state. And usually you can figure out where somebody works. And the date, if you say today, yesterday, you're giving away a date, and you've created a HIPAA violation. So these are actual cases. So a Rhode Island doctor was fired after posting enough about a patient, not their name, not their picture, but a community member was able to identify who the patient was. This doctor was fired for that very promptly. This actually happened about 6 years ago. So things have changed somewhat, but they were let go. Another doctor, this is actually a resident, was sued for $1.5 million after posting pictures of a patient in the ED that was intoxicated. They were off service, but they were in the hospital. They took a picture and they posted it. Not smart, all right? And they were sued. This is still in, they haven't been won or not won the lawsuit, but it's still in process. You know, we're expected to be sued. You know, what is it? You know, one in three of us is going to be sued for some kind of medical malpractice type of thing. We kind of expect that. But this, you know, could we prevent this? Another, this one was pretty big in the news. So a Miami doctor fired after, this was, again, a combination of both unprofessional and patient confidentiality issues. But this was a gender-affirming surgery, a surgeon, and after posting insulting comments about his patients, also posted pictures of their genitals following removal. So for instance, male to female, gender-affirming surgery would post pictures of the patient's penis. Okay, so this person worked for another university here and was fired. So all of those things can happen. So the board, so there was actually a study in the Annals of Internal Medicine, and they created vignettes and sent them to all the boards in the U.S., so all of the licensing boards. 70-something percent of them responded. And there was a high consensus on who would be investigated. So misinformation on their practice website leading to claims or treatments that are not true or misrepresentation of board certification. 81% said that they would investigate that. Patient confidentiality issues, 79%. Inappropriate communication with patients, so using of online dating and contacting your patient through that venue would be considered definitely we would investigate. Moderate consensus, however, about 73% said if you looked intoxicated, they would investigate you for a substance use problem. All right. Patient confidentiality, with potential identifiers is what I just showed. About 65% said that they would investigate in discriminatory speech online. The ones that were a little bit grayer, but still in the 40%, was things like alcohol without intoxication. They might still investigate you. I don't want to be investigated by the board. I'm not going to post that anymore. Patient confidentiality with no identifiers, right? So just posting about a blog about a patient encounter. Only about 16% said that they would investigate, but I'm not sure that they understood the question. All right, so that is what the board said they would do. Now they went, this was an emergency medicine program, so this was actually polling EM faculty as well as residents and students. And you can see that there's a lot of consensus, right? So for the big ones, residents, attendings, and students all felt that HIPAA violations should be investigated, inflammatory communication towards patients should be investigated. Intoxication, students, less than 20% thought that that should be looked into. And if you remember that first slide that I showed, that quite a few of them had pictures of being intoxicated, it's probably because they don't think it's a big deal. There is a big change here with the difference here with the intoxication. The rest of them pretty much aligned, except for the non-intoxicated one. So be aware, I think most of us know this, but we don't realize it when we're doing our posts. All right, so how to avoid problems, maintain a separate this is from the AMA. So maintain a separate professional and personal accounts. There's some blurring between that. Like I said, a lot of physicians prefer having the same one. Either way, if you're going to post on either of them, please make sure that what you're posting is professional. Use your privacy settings so things aren't public, so that they're only shared with your friends, not your friends of friends. Avoid friending patients or their families. This is a recommendation by the AMA. If you do decide to interact with your patients on social media, be cognizant of what you're posting and make sure you don't have inappropriate boundaries there. Again, be aware of patient privacy. Help your colleagues. If you notice a colleague posted something inappropriate, please let them know. At least give them the opportunity to take it down and address the issue. And then if you have a conflict of interest, disclose it. We see a lot of people that are posting on like the newest best thing, but they actually sell it. And so there's a conflict of interest there. So make sure that you do that as well. That's also a recommendation from the AMA. You can actually look at your own institution's policies. Boca Regional has it. You can look at it through the intranet. I pulled two different points from it. So know that you can be disciplined up to termination by Boca Regional Hospital for off-duty conduct in violation of their policy. And you can be held personally liable for commentary that is untrue, obscene, proprietary, libelous. Okay? So realize that even here at Boca Regional, if you do something wrong, there can be issues. And similar things are at FAU, so for the residents and the students, know your policies. All right. Ooh, I spent a lot of time talking about the bad. All right, let's talk about the good. All right, so benefits of social media, lifelong learning, practice and professional promotion, professional networking, and public health, I think, are the big things that we can talk about social media. So CME and lifelong learning, we're typically thinking about Grand Rounds. I get some CME for this. I'm learning about social media today. I learned about sepsis a couple weeks ago. I can go to my internal, my meetings, my national meetings, right? I can even go on to journals and get CME that way. Well, now we're going to this free open access medical education that's online, right? I can go to... I'm worried. I want to learn about how to read an EKG for Brugada syndrome. I can now go on Facebook and ask a community of cardiologists to educate me on this. Okay, so this is actually taking flight, and I think social media is very beneficial for this. And this is actually the most common reason that physicians use social media. It's to find out what other people are doing. What are other doctors doing? So again, the benefits, it's rapid dissemination. As soon as an article gets posted, somebody's sharing it. All right, so you're going to be up to date on the newest things, okay? It also has editorial, right? So the expert in that is going to talk about whatever that article is or whatever this new medicine is or whatever. The downside is the editorial is not peer-reviewed. So be aware that if you're believing everything blindly, you might get stuck somewhere there, all right? So this is just a way that as you're using free open access medical education, you still want to critically appraise it. I think we talk a lot about journal articles. Those are already peer reviewed, so they've already somewhat been critically appraised. Posts on social media or blogs have not been peer reviewed at all, so you really have to be aware. I'm not going to go into all the details of this, but these are one of the ways that at least in EM, which has led the way with regards to free open access medical education, how they critically appraise blogs and podcasts. Again, use of social media. You can follow people, right? So this person's teaching me all about the kidney. Why BUN goes up, all right? It's interesting, but do I really trust this person? I've never met them. This is a case of, this is from an EKG group in Facebook. They'll post EKGs and tell you all about things. If you actually look at the cardiologist, what they're posting afterwards, there's a lot of disagreement about what the EKG shows. So who do I believe? I don't know, but it could be helpful, right? Brugada syndrome, great. You can also use it for sharing your own articles, right? So advancing your own career. So this person actually just posted a JAMA article that they authored. So again, very rapid dissemination of information. All right, so it can be very helpful. And actually, I enjoy looking at being in a community of people and seeing what they have to tell me about. So these are some tips for using social media, right? So Twitter, you can follow people. Don't follow me because I'm not going to post anything. And then you can follow journals, right? So you can follow like the New England Journal of Medicine or the Journal of General Internal Medicine or whatever your preferred journal is, and they will post when big articles are coming about, and so you can follow it there. Facebook, you can join groups with communities of similar interests. You can, on Doximity, you can actually get free CME credits. You can follow podcasts. Podcasts is another way of doing social media. So Consult Guys, White Coat Investors, all of those, you can look for all of those and they can be very helpful. But remember to critically appraise them because, again, they are not peer-reviewed. This is moving so fast that we haven't been able to catch up on how to actually make all of this the way we want it. All right. So how about social media and public health? So social media is a very rapid form, excuse me, of communication. So in emergencies, you can notify a lot of people very quickly about what's going on. All right. Actually, on the Boston Marathon, there's a lot of articles that are referring to this. It took 9 minutes for emergency services to contact the hospitals about the Boston Marathon bombing. In this particular one here, this is a minute after the bombing happened. All right. Holy expletive. Explosion. And then this was a few minutes after that. Right. I have no idea what's going on, but lots of things going on. Actually, if you ask some of the, they did ask, some of the providers in the emergency rooms, they actually found out about it through Twitter before they found out about it from emergency medicine. So not a bad thing, okay? You can also, for other health issues, right? There's an outbreak of flu. Go get your flu vaccine. So there's lots of positives from a public health perspective that sharing on social media can be helpful. But there's a lot of misinformation, right? The anti-vax movement largely has been propelled within social media, okay? So there's a lot of misinformation that's being posted. Yay, podcasts. the other thing to be aware of, and I'm not saying not to do this, but there was actually a recent article in CNN that was looking at people that attacked physicians for addressing the anti-vax movement. I hope you die. I hope your kid, something terrible happens to them. A number of these types of posts that were actually happening. So you may get attacked if you try to correct some of these misconceptions on social media. The other thing is you can use it for marketing. It's actually quite an effective tool for marketing. So the Mayo Clinic and Massachusetts General Hospital both launched a social media marketing intervention, and I'm sure they had more than just posting on social media. They have like marketers that are paid good money for this. But you can see that by posting, they had lots of referrals to their website and actually an increase of 139% of patient appointments for Mass General. They wanted to do more lung cancer screening, so they launched an initiative on social media, and they're following the campaign, they had a 52% increase in scheduled screenings. So that's good. We're getting more lung cancer screening. We're doing lots of good things, right? So marketing, it helps the institution. It helps the patients. That is definitely good. You can also use it for professional promotion, right? So use Twitter to tweet your scholarly work. You just publish something, post it. Somebody else might click on it. Somebody else might read it and say, oh, I'm doing similar research to that. Let me reach out to you, and maybe we can collaborate. Or they might say, oh, that's interesting. I'm going to cite it on my next article. More citations you have, the more sort of well-known you are, all right? So it can actually help you from an academic perspective. Creating microblogs and tutorials, love that word. So this one, you start to gather sort of expertise in your area. You post things, you know, you're on your particular specialty, people like the way you post, they feel that they learned from you, and all of a sudden, you are known as an expert in that field. Make sure that what you're posting is accurate, We don't want to be the person that's sharing the misinformation, right? And for those of working in academics, promotions are starting to take digital presence into account. So people that are really active in Twitter, right, that have really made their name from posting on social media, they're getting promoted based off of that and not based off of what we typically look at, which is research, articles, things of that nature. All right, so you can get national notoriety rather quickly. Social media can also help you with your patient ratings. All right, so spine surgeons with an active social media account had more patient ratings. Interestingly, it did not correlate with better ratings. So my caveat to that is if you're a really good spine surgeon, get present on social media. You'll get lots of good ratings. If you're not so good of a surgeon, just stay off because you're going to get more bad ratings. So be aware of that. The Google ratings were positively affected by how present you are on social media, but the rest of them weren't. Interestingly, the age of the physician had a negative predictor for scores. So for every 10 years of you were in practice, the ratings actually went down by 0.1. So that was another finding from this particular article. We can also use social media for patient support. Twitter created a breast cancer community to try to help dispel any myths as well as provide support for patients. And the normal sort of anxiety level for women with breast cancer is somewhere between 20 and 30%. In this particular article, it was about 28% in the baseline. Those that participated in this particular community, their anxiety levels went down to 9%. Okay? So it can be quite helpful. Using social media for chronic conditions also resulted in better care for patients in 48%, so about 50-50. This is from that article there. You can see that for support, disease management, diagnosis, and disease modification, social media can be really good. Patient education, not so good because there's so many myths out there that they're not getting accurate information. So be aware that for management, it might be good for helping them understand their diagnosis. But as far as just education, be aware, Wikipedia and YouTube were the worst for misinformation. So why do patients use the internet? Well, 80% of adults use the internet and social media specifically. They're using it just to get healthcare information. 1 in 15 searches on Google is actually related to healthcare. 60% of patients who use the internet for medical information felt the information was as good, if not better, than their doctors. So Dr. Google is doing really well. At least that's what our patients think. All right. But with that being said, 71% of the patients that take this information to their doctors are not asking you to follow what Dr. Google said. They're actually coming in for your opinion. They're coming in saying, I found this, doctor. Can you help me? Is this relevant? Should I be doing this? They're asking for your opinion, so don't take it as they are trying to question your knowledge. The other thing is social media does for the doctor-patient relation. It actually increases patients' knowledge and confidence to have that discussion. So the more that they know, the more of a valuable discussion and communication that you can have with your patients. The other thing is maybe they have sensitive symptoms that they may not have otherwise brought up, but when they found it on the internet, it was a common symptom for that particular diagnosis, so they feel more empowered to share that information with you. That's a good thing. However, patients are also more likely to switch doctors that don't support their use of looking things up on social media or Google. So if you go at them and say, well, I really wish you wouldn't look at that and just listen to me, they're more likely to switch doctors. All right? So be aware of that. So how do we actually address this, Dr. Google? So you have 15 minutes with the patient. You have to get the history, do the physical exam, get your diagnosis, and then educate them. Patients are spending hours on the internet reading about things. You don't have hours to be able to provide them with patient education. So this is a great opportunity to be able to educate them that. So realize that we're not their sole source of medical information. So what do we do? One, have open-ended, right? Be open-ended, open-minded. Make sure that you welcome the fact that they wanted to know more about their disease process. Why do you feel that you have this? What resources did you use? And why did you conclude that you have this rare disease? I'm so glad that you looked up on the internet, but let's talk about how your particular presentation doesn't apply here, right? So you're at least validating the fact that they went and did a search, and create an open space for questions, all right? Have handouts in your office, because again, if you don't give them the education, they're going to go look it up. So have handouts that you know have the correct information so that they're not getting misinformation. provide your patients with reputable sites to go to. For diabetes, go to ada.org, right? That's great. So anything with the .org, .edu, hospital sites, those are good places to refer your patients to. Wikis, YouTube videos, be a little bit cautious with that, all right? Making sure that those sites are vetted by physicians. Create your own blog. This is where you get to be a social media influencer. I know a lot about X, Y, and Z. I'm going to create my own blog. And all of a sudden, I've created a national name for myself, and other people are referring their patients to my blog. The other thing that I wanted to make note is that older patients don't think that they're not using the internet. They actually are, and they are doing Dr. Google, and they're doing all that. This isn't just in younger patients. The issue with older patients is that they're embarrassed. They actually don't want to bring up the fact that they looked things up. So at least open it up. Where are you getting your information from? Ask them. May open up that dialogue so that you know where they're going and they're not just following somebody else's misinformation. So just other issues to note. You all commented that social media is probably not that good for patients, and you know I've kind of talked about the misinformation issue. But the other thing is mental health. So it's been shown that social media use, especially in adolescents and young adults, increases the risk of depression and anxiety. There's also an increased normalization of alcohol or drug use, which leads to an increased use of alcohol and drug use. So all of these things are negatives. The ease of sharing misinformation. In Twitter last year, 5 million shares a month to fake news websites. I'm not trying to get political here. Fake news websites. 5 million shares per month. Now, there were 20 million shares per month of reputable news networks, but still, that is quite a bit of misinformation that's out there. And then again, as I mentioned earlier, research is limited due to issues with ethics and confidentiality with regards to using social media information. So the amount of information that we have about social media use is pretty limited at this point. I think this is a great opportunity for the residents and younger physicians and students to really consider doing some research in this area, because a lot of people are using it. And if you look in the last year or so in JAMA and a number of other reputable articles, there's a lot of editorials talking about this. So. Just know that. All right, so a few take-home points. Be wary of posts that may be seen as unprofessional. Be careful what you post. Be aware of patient privacy, and it's very easy to violate that. Know your organization's social media policy. For Boca Regional, just go to the intranet. You can access it there. Residents and students, you have your guidebooks, handbooks. Critically appraise the information you find on social media, but use it. Use social media for your continuing medical education. All right, I think it's a really great opportunity, a new realm for us to be diving into keeping up to date. And then empower your patients to know about their diagnosis and symptoms, encourage them to read more about that, but guide them to make sure that they're not getting any misinformation, and create your own online content. That way I can follow you. All right, any questions? Yes. I'm not going to speak because I am not a program director, right? So I'm not going to speak for the program directors here. We have one, and one just left. But in the literature, they actually do. About, I want to say it was like 70% to 80% will actually try to Google search and see what they find. A few will actually just search on Facebook or Twitter for that. So be aware of that. And I will say that I've seen profanity for people that we're hiring. And initially, it's like, well, I guess I use profanity all the time, day-to-day basis. But it also leads to a kind of negative taste in your mouth when you see it posted on a public forum. So be aware. Well, like I said earlier, most employers are going to be at-will employees. So they can fire you for any reason other than any protected entity, right? They can't fire you for being a woman. They can't fire you for being a certain race. But they can fire you for whatever they feel may misrepresent their organization. So if they feel that you being a communist at your posting on a social media site reflects poorly on their institution, you are an at-will employee and they can fire you. Again, the caveat to that is if you're a government employee. Then there's all sorts of other hoops that you have to jump through, bureaucracy. So, yeah, not my rules. Yes. Right. To understand. Which, again, this is why I consider myself, you know, I just watch. I try not to post. You'll, you know, very rarely see pictures of even my children. I don't want people to know who my kids are or where they go to school. So, all right, any other questions? All right, thank you very much.